This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer and joining me today is Theo Squires. How are we, Theo?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. The tears have dried up a little bit now. Yours, Ghosty?
Yeah, just about.
Yeah. Just about. The emotional day as well at Anfield yesterday. Yeah.
I'm overworked. I'm tired. I'm emotional. It's all going on.
Well, we will get into it. Just a few things before we start. We are live on Facebook and YouTube. So if you've got a question, a comment, an observation you want us to get to during the pod, just drop it in there. I'm keeping an eye on our YouTube chat and our producer Ian is keeping an eye on the Facebook chat, so you'll send me any questions there. And also before we go, our LFC app is on a very special offer at the moment. You get 6 months free. It's ad free. The biggest complaint we get on our website is that the ads are awful. They're intrusive. They stop you scrolling. They stop you reading. We know it frustrates us too. So I couldn't recommend the app more. It really is good. We actually had someone tweet me yesterday, or tweet the both of us, didn't they? Yeah. Saying that he downloaded it, and I think he called it a godsend or something like that. But
game changer. Totally agree with
that. Yeah, and it is really slick. It's really good. There's exclusive content on there, and yet no ads, and yet limited time offer until Feb 1st. You get 6 months free, so right past the end of the season and right in this time of talking new managers, it's appropriate, isn't it? And we will be covering that every day. I often say this, but nobody covers Liverpool in more detail than us. We send home, away, abroad, everywhere. We are there every step and every kick of the way. So, yeah, download the app. We'll stick that in the YouTube comments and in the pod description if you're listening in the pod, and in the Facebook comments as well. In fact, if our producer Ian is listening, which I hope he is, hopefully he'll do it for me. He's giving me a smile. Right, so let's get to it. An emotional weekend. Friday's plans were turned on their head. Obviously, Paul, you and I did a bit of a snap pod, but I do fancy talking through some of the themes of that again, because I think a lot of people won't have listened, or Theo, you certainly haven't, and just say a lot of people just want to talk about Jürgen, and they want to talk about next managers, so we will do that. But it was an emotional day yesterday, Anfield, Liverpool 5, Norwich 2. Jürgen Klopp didn't want everyone to sing his name and didn't want it to be about the old man, as he put it, on the sidelines. But it took about 57 seconds for the cop to say, no, Jürgen, just get on board. We're going to be singing your name a lot in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't like it, does he, when they sing, I'm so glad that Jürgen is a Red. And that was a song that kind of came towards the back end of the 2021-22 season, wasn't it, when Liverpool were going for all four trophies. I remember him saying it after the, I think it was Spurs game last season when they won 4-3. They were 3-0 up after 25 minutes or something like that, and they were belting it out for most of the game, and then obviously Tottenham got back into it, and it takes a Diogo Jota goal for them to make it 4-3. And he said after the game he was quite angry. That was obviously the game where he done his hamstring in celebration and had a little bit of a run in with Paul Tierney, and he took the fans on, didn't he? He said, you know, don't be singing this, you know, sing it when games are won and whatever else, but don't be singing it during games. And, you know, even Jürgen Klopp probably doesn't have, you know, autonomy on what fans can and can't sing about.
But you put that on him.
They did listen a little bit. But yesterday it was always going to be aired, wasn't it? And it took 56 seconds. As soon as I heard that, I kind of looked at the scoreboard and it was 56, and Doyle said, thought it was 58, and I saw 56, so he said, well, let's say 57 then. So less than a minute for singing his name. But other than that, they didn't really, certainly that was the only time they did it in the first half, and then they did it on the hour mark, and then in the last 5 minutes, and then a full time obviously went for it, and it was just like a little nod just to show their appreciation. There'd obviously be loads of chances for that between now and the end of the season, but I think there's also a little bit of a realization among the fan base that there's still so much to play for and still so much to go for, that they don't want it kind of getting in the way and it distracting and it being becoming the main storyline of the season. So, you know, they kind of give them a little nod of approval, but didn't completely go against his wishes. And that probably would have been just the way he wanted it, really.
Yeah, Theo, just before kick-off, There's obviously a video that ITV put out that went round when they were singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," and you see Jürgen on the sidelines, and I don't know whether there was a tear, but it certainly looked, he was very close to it. He looked emotional yesterday, and to be fair, I thought he would have been more emotional in his press conference and perhaps in the few times we've seen him since. I mean, he looked a bit emotional in the video the club put out, but he was kind of holding it back. But yeah, I think Sunday, it sort of hit him, didn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, probably did hit home a little bit, but it's just something he's been thinking about for a while, and it's a decision he made a number of months ago now. It won't be until we get to May where it's really hitting home, and it's like he's on his way out. But he's done this before. He did it when he was leaving Dortmund, when he was leaving Mainz, and these are clubs where he spent 7 years as a manager, 7 years plus when you include his playing time with Mainz. He knows what it's like when you do leave a club, and he has got that connection here. It probably means that little bit more because he's left his home, he's gone somewhere completely new, he's been really warmly embraced by everyone here. He is an honorary Scouser, he holds that in high regard. So yeah, he's going to feel emotional when the time comes, but we've seen that a lot in recent years when you've seen so many great players leave the club. But there's a lot of games and hopefully a lot of trophies to be won before the tears come May time.
Yeah, I mean, I must say Friday, obviously you and I have talked on Friday, but sometimes, you know, obviously you work in the industry, you hear rumblings, you hear rumours. This was one, wasn't it, that really... It was a real shocker. I was in our conference room with Maria, our editor, and we were having a chat, and one of the reporters popped her head in, and she goes, Jürgen Klopp, Liverpool's tweeted Jürgen Klopp is leaving. And I just looked at her, and just for a second felt like saying, oh, you've been add-on. You know, it'll be one of those Twitter accounts as like LFCC or whatever, and they've dressed it up. And I was thinking, there's absolutely no way that they've just dropped that at like 10 a.m. on a Friday morning. And then we were like, seriously, yeah. Liverpool have tweeted that, ran back, and everyone was kind of like, it was a weird atmosphere because it wasn't really noisy. It sort of did get noisy in the 5 minutes or so afterwards, but it wasn't really noisy immediately. It was almost like everyone's taken a few minutes to take it in. But I mean, you said before, Gorsty, he doesn't really want it to be the theme of the last few months of the season. But do you think that really hurts them? Because I think there's elements of Liverpool, and they, as they quite often have under Klopp, have embraced emotion.
Yeah.
Because he's an emotional guy. We're an emotional club. And they've embraced that emotion and allowed it to sort of manifest itself into a brilliant journey and quite often success and trophies.
Yeah, I mean, I think time will tell us ultimately how it does impact Liverpool. But I don't get the sense that they're going to fall off a cliff in terms of them just, you know, completely collapsing because of the news. Obviously, he's known about it, well, he told FSG, didn't he, in November, and he's still been able to get himself up for the December period, for that run between late November and early January, when I think they played 13 games in total, and everything has kind of stayed on course during that, you know, through to the Europa League, FA Cup, Carabao Cup final, top of the Premier League now by 5 points. So everything has not only stayed on course but improved and got better, and their chances of success look a lot greater than they did when he initially told Mike Gordon in November, whenever that was. So he certainly managed to harness it in a positive way, and I imagine it'd be the same for the players, really, because, you know, Van Dijk was saying on Saturday, wasn't he, to the club's official site, that we want to give the manager the farewell that he deserves. And you just get a sense, okay, they've only played one game, but you got a sense that everyone will want to put in a real shift now between now and the end of the season. They're all, you know, Klopp's legacy is already secure with what he's won in the last 5 years, but there's a sense that if they have a superb final third of the season now, who knows what else could be added to it. You know, it could be a Europa League, it could be a Carabao Cup, an FA Cup, could even be the Premier League, couldn't it? So I don't get a sense that this announcement is going to disrupt them in any way. I think if anything, it's going to put some wind into the sails of a team that has only lost once since early April in the Premier League. So yeah, time will tell, but I don't get the impression that this news is going to make the house of cards fall down. I really don't.
No. I quite like the fact that most of the squad haven't spoken about it. Obviously, Van Dijk did his interview with the club channels, which you want the official voice from there. And I think, was it Robertson and Jones did ITV after the game yesterday?
They're going to get asked about it.
They are going to get asked, and if they have to answer, they will answer. But the fact that there's nothing on social media at all, that they are all keeping it in-house, they know this isn't the time to be getting upset about the manager. Yeah. There's a lot of games to be won.
Sorry to interrupt, not long afterwards, I think Salah, maybe it was on Saturday actually, but Salah put a picture of him in the gym. The answer
is very Salah,
like you say, it's business.
But yeah, so like, would these, most of this team have won the Premier League before, they've won trophies before, and yeah, you've got the younger generation there, the new signings, but when you've still got Van Dijk leading that camp, Salah, Robertson, Alisson, Trent, they're not going to let standards slip. And it's like, right, focus on the football, focus on getting the results, focus on winning these trophies, and then hopefully we're something massive to celebrate at the end of the season on top of waving off the manager.
Yeah, all right, well, I want to get through some questions and comments before we have a little chat about Norwich, because I feel like the game might fade into the background a little bit in this pod, which is fair enough, it's only the FA Cup after all. But yeah, I mean, few questions and comments. First of all, and I think we're seeing a lot of this, someone has said, Gorsi, what is the real reason Jürgen is leaving? His statement doesn't add up. Now, we're going to hear these sorts of rumours, we're going to hear these sorts, this sort of chat, but did you get any sense at all that there's anything underlying here, that there's any other reason than what Jürgen said in his press conference and his club channel?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's a job that's one of the most demanding in world football, isn't it? And and I think there was kind of a crystallizing moment when he sat down for a meeting about pre-season and, you know, logistics and, you know, mundane plans, really. And Klopp doesn't like the long-haul trips at the best of times. He understands that a club the size of Liverpool has to do these commercial obligations, and you've got to fly to the Far East, you've got to fly to Australia, you know, remember they went to Australia for an end-of-season friendly, or fly to America to help grow the brand, as it were. He doesn't like all that. He prefers the kind of week-long trips in Evian or Southampton or the place they went to in the summer, which was in the Black Forest. He prefers that kind of trip. So all that kind of takes it out of you, particularly when you've done it for 8 years. And it was almost just like a bit of a moment when he thought, have I got the energy to go again here, to do this again? And I think an unspoken aspect about it is the fact that he is a granddad now. You know, I think it was his son had a son himself, actually, over the summer.
It's one of the first questions in the first press conference, wasn't it? What's it like being a granddad?
Yeah. And he got asked, after the Brighton game, it was the October international break, so I think someone asked him, you know, are you planning to spend your break? And he mentioned that he was going back to Germany to see his grandson. So he probably doesn't get to see him as much, you know, growing up. So by the end of the season, you know, that he will be, you know, nearing his first birthday or maybe past it. And it'll just be an opportunity for him to, like he said towards the end of the press conference on Friday, live a normal life. You know, he said, I'm a normal guy who hasn't lived a normal life. And, you know, he'll ride off into the sunset with his legacy secure and money in his back pocket to go and enjoy his life as a husband, as a father, as a grandfather, and just taking football from a different perspective. So there's nothing else that seems to be underlying. There's no great fallout. There's no massive fight with the ownership over one or two things. It is just a purely personal thing that the energy levels are kind of running low.
I understand that completely. Like, it does add up. If you look at previous seasons where he was maybe thinking about going during the pandemic year, obviously lost his mother, he's away from home, he couldn't go back to the funeral, that takes its toll. He comes back, they nearly win all the trophies. If they'd won all the trophies, maybe he considers going at the end of that season. And then the next season where they drop off on Thursday, well, he knew what was coming on Friday and the rest of us didn't. He did say he knows what's coming next. If they go for all four trophies this year, the next questions are you going to drop off next year? Yeah. And like, this team, it is a lot better than anyone thought at this stage. It's Liverpool 2.0, but he was never going to be here at the end of that journey. He was just taking those first few steps with them to pass on the baton. And he is looking older than when he joined the club. That's unavoidable. You can see why he thinks it's a good time to walk away, and I don't think anyone can begrudge him that. He's leaving a team in a very good state for whoever takes over.
Yeah. But he made reference to that as well, didn't he? He said, if you'd seen a picture when I joined and a picture now, you'd say it's that only 9 years. I think he likened it to dog years, didn't he?
It takes
its toll.
Yeah, I think people underestimate, and there's going to be these sorts of rumours. You always get that, you know, it's just part parcel of football, isn't it? And I think we need to respect the manager for being, he's a pretty honest guy, isn't he? You know, the only white lie that I think he tells week in, week out is that he doesn't read anything.
Because, yeah.
You know, he reads everything. But otherwise, you know, he's a pretty honest guy, straight guy, very emotional. And I think you can't. We love his emotion because that's who we. That's what makes him who he is as a manager, and that's what, you know, has made him suit Liverpool so much. But the flip side is, I always thought he would make a decision based on his emotions, and if he's tired, if he's not particularly happy, then that would come. And I always thought he'd do 7 years. He did 7 years at Mainz, 7 years at Dortmund, and I thought he would do 7 years at Liverpool because that's how he felt the natural progression would take him. But yeah, I honestly think that the point you made there about the season they went for four, you know, it took a lot out of everyone. You know, I know diehard Liverpool fans, you know, who it really, really took its toll on them, who thought, do we have the emotion and the energy to go again after that, you know, like the highs, the real low at the end, this feeling of what should have been a season to celebrate was almost like a sad end to the season with the way it panned out, and of course the events in Paris. And I honestly think that if they'd have won things there, he might have walked away, and I think he probably did really think long and hard about walking away then, but I think he probably felt like he should take them on, and then last season was so bad at times that he probably felt duty bound to stick with them and push
that on. That's exactly why he's still the manager today, because last season was so frustrating. I think if Liverpool would have had a good season last season, you know, however you define that, really,
yeah,
I think
they got back in the Champions League. He might have walked away in the summer.
Maybe, yeah.
The last contract would have been up this summer anyway, wasn't it? It was a 2-year extension. So he obviously got caught up in emotion when he signed that anyway.
100%.
Yeah. And he was like going for everything, thinking, oh, this could go on again and again. But then when the reality sets in, you realise you're a bit older, you don't quite have that energy, you're not going to be able to be here to complete the journey, but you still revamped a lot of the squad. Yeah, like I said, it's a good time for him to go from his personal level.
It's frustrating, isn't it? But as a fan, because you don't want him to leave, but always leave the people wanting more. And I honestly think that, you know, I love so Jamie Carragher. I thought he had a good retirement. He didn't go off and play for a different club. He left at a point where he still thought he could probably have done a year or two more. So
especially when they ship 50 goals the next season.
I mean, a few other bits and bobs. A lot of people talking Alonso. We'll come to manage. Actually, we'll talk Alonso, if you don't mind, a little bit later on. Few people saying Pep Linders, which I think is really interesting why Pep Linders didn't stick around. Theo, do you get a sense that perhaps the club have either spoken to Pep Linders or just decided, whether they've decided, you know, FSG, that he's not the right man to take them forward? Because I was surprised initially when the news broke and it said all his coaching team, including Pep Linders, a lot of us assumed that Pep Linders would maybe succeed Klopp. But them announcing that now suggests that maybe they've had a chat with him, or they've just decided behind the scenes that he's not right for the job.
I was surprised that didn't come up more on Friday. I thought that might have been one of the questions asked of FSG, whether he could become a contender for the job.
They did sort of ask him about that. They did ask Billy Holmes
why he's going, wasn't it? But it wasn't quite, could he be a contender here? Is this his time at Liverpool is definitely done? Or when you're drawing up your shortlist, his name could emerge back on there. It's funny, like, we're having this conversation now, where if you want the continuity, you think, oh, maybe he would be a good option because they're playing well. He's obviously had a big impact on the change of formation, the new style, and it's working. But if we'd had this conversation 12 months ago, you'd almost be like, not good riddance, but yeah, he's not in that conversation at all because it was so poor and his book was blamed, his influence on the tactics was blamed. It's more of a shock, I think, to see Matos leave out of all of them.
Yeah.
Like Linders has always said in the past, I don't want to be a number two forever. When Klopp goes, I go, and then that's it. I want to be a manager. Kravitz is Klopp's like assistant all the way through. He was always going to go. Whereas Matos was the one who essentially replaced Linders, didn't he? Is that bridgeway between the first team and the academy. And we're seeing how good a role that is. Greater than ever this season with so many academy players stepping up. He felt like he could be the one to bridge that gap again, to make sure that the legacy continues. But maybe he's got managerial aspirations of his own, or maybe he goes up the food chain himself. Like if Linders goes and becomes a manager somewhere, maybe he could be the assistant, he could step up again. But then we'll wait and see what happens in the weeks and months ahead. Like obviously it's public now, Liverpool are going to be looking at targets, who they want to take on the job. They've either had conversations with him and decided it's not right, because you think you'd have that talk with him at the very least to say, look, you're not going to be in our thoughts, or it's a conversation that's still to be had and he could maybe still have a chance of having an interview. But we'll wait and see. At the moment, he will be leaving at the end of the season.
Yeah, I enjoyed one comment, by the way, who said Pep Guardiola, forgive Pep Guardiola, and then when City get relegated... because the charges were taken. Michael,
prove you can do it without the Abu Dhabi billions.
Yeah, prove you can do it without the money. Yeah, you know, Michael, I would certainly take that. When City get relegated,
the thing that's interesting is
too, sorry.
Yeah, when Brendan Rodgers left, Klopp was the outstanding candidate, wasn't he? And I think Liverpool were lucky to get him. Really, you know, don't particularly remember too many others getting a mention apart from
Ancelotti.
Klopp, yeah. Ancelotti. But other than those two, that was it, wasn't it? Now it's sort of like, well, I don't think fans. I mean, some fans might want Alonso. Some fans might argue for whoever. But I don't think. I think it's, you know, a kind of. This is who they begrudgingly accept to come in, as opposed to the, you know, they absolutely definitely must have manager because they've got the manager who they want, and that is going to be something that is going to be difficult as a transition. And at least with Alonso, he's coming in with a groundswell of support to begin with as a European Cup winning midfielder for Liverpool. That offers him a little bit of not so much breathing room, because I think Liverpool fans will massively get behind whoever replaces Klopp, but it's going to be massive shoes to fill, isn't it? And the comparisons will be there early on, I'm sure.
It's quite a nice change in what's happened under FSG. Like, you look at their previous managerial searches, when it's, oh, we'll go for Dalglish because we need a short-term option, mm-hmm. and then they can't really go against the fans when he does well. Yeah. Rodgers and Martinez were the two in 2012, weren't they? And I remember being at the time quite underwhelmed by that, thinking Liverpool deserve better. But when you get Klopp, it's like you want the best, but you're punching above your weight to get him in the first place. Like, if that was in the summer and you'd waited a few more months and you're going against, I don't know, a Bayern Munich, a Barcelona or something like that, you're not getting Jurgen Klopp. It was the right fit at the right time.
Yeah.
But now it's not you striving to get the best. It's you deserve the best. And it's like going back to maybe more. And you've got Rafa. Like, he's won the league titles. He's won European trophies. You've got a manager who could take you to that next level. And I've not really been in that situation since. It's just a shame that there isn't a standout world-class manager out there. Like, you look at Alonso, he could be in a few years, but he's got to enjoy that journey with Liverpool or wherever he goes next.
I think it's tough, isn't it? I think right now you're right, there isn't many people out there, you know, that even when Klopp took over, they felt like that was a time when there were so many big name managers, you know, like Mourinho was still a massive name, wasn't he, at the time, whereas now you wouldn't touch
you might have done Mourinho, would you?
Yeah, you wouldn't touch Mourinho with a barge pole, would you? But at the time he was such a big character, and I think even Ancelotti, if Ancelotti was available, and I like Ancelotti a lot, but I'm not too sure whether I would go with him now. So I think Liverpool have got to take a bit of a gamble now. We will have a proper chat about managers in a bit. I do want to I want to touch upon Norwich, because otherwise it does feel a bit weird.
It's sounding like Jurgen Klopp now. It's like that in every pre-match press conference.
But before we do, Gorse, it's 7 minutes past 12, so we can talk Virgil van Dijk. There was some embargoed chat with van Dijk. Gorse, you caught up with him in the mix zone yesterday.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, slightly worrying, wasn't it, really, from him? Wasn't totally committal, but you were there, so you can kind of give us a bit more context.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting quote, he initially came over to myself and a couple of others, and the first thing he said was, I'm not talking about the manager. So you think, okay, well, how can we get around that? You're asking one or two things which don't veer too close to that, but are enough, you know, kind of similar enough for him to speak a little bit more on it. And then towards the end of the conversation, it's kind of just drifted towards his contract situation, and will it be part of the new era? That's a big question. I have to say, he was laughing when he said that. You know, written down, looks a bit worrying, but he was laughing. He said, I don't know. 18 months left on my contract. That's correct. Good maths. I don't know. The club will have a big job on their hands. That is well known. To replace not only the manager, but the whole staff. And there are so many things that will change. I'm very curious as to which direction they will go in. But that will be announced and we'll see our situation. I can't say too much about it. So the very curious line was interesting for me. I got the feeling from, you know, talking to him and hearing from yesterday that it was more, not so much from his end, it was more, well, I've got to see what the club want to do, what the new regime want to do, as opposed to him just saying, oh yeah, I'm going to be staying, no problem. Because with the best will in the world, it's not necessarily in his hands, as much as we think that, you know, it should be with him being as good as he has been or whatever else. So yeah, that was interesting to hear from him. I think, obviously, Liverpool have also got Trent Alexander-Arnold's situation on the back burner, and Mohamed Salah's. These are massive players that you need to be getting around the table and talking about at a time when you're not even sure who the new manager or perhaps more importantly the sporting director is going to be. So there's going to be a massive power void at Liverpool in the coming months.
Yeah.
And those who are tasked with getting it right and sorting it out is probably the biggest job that they've had.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, the sporting director, we were all talking about Klopp, which is natural, obviously. But Jörg Schmacker, we knew he wasn't going to be there for a long term. But that, Theo, is massive, isn't it, for FSG? Because the sporting director won't only shape the squad in terms of those contracts, but he'll shape the next manager. I'm sure. In fact, I'm pretty sure right now the conversations obviously will be about manager, but there'll be big conversations around sporting director because they might want to give that person a chance to help choose the manager. Because we've seen before, if sporting director or manager, and Klopp seems to, he comes from a country, and to be honest, I'll come to this later, this is another reason why I quite like Alonso, but he came from a country where sporting director, working with a sporting director was pretty normal. So he had no issues with it. But we've seen before, managers and sporting directors don't mesh. Then you can have a... It doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's at least in Premier League terms now a bit more modern. Like, managers do seem more accepting of it. We are going into that new stage and the younger managers, look at Arsenal, with Edu and Arteta, they seem to work quite well together. And Alonso's of a similar ilk, whoever you got in, he obviously has the experience there. But you do need the right man. And you would like the sporting director in to at least have some way to bridge it in terms of these are the players we're looking at. But then you don't know what the manager's going to be in terms of what formation he wants to play, what his like preferred players he wants to keep, the ones he wants to bring in, who he wants to let go. There's FSG have probably got to take control here and go, we want to keep it as it is with youth players coming through. We would rather have a Jarrell Cranter in the team than giving you 50 million to go and sign Mickey van der Ven, something like this. Mm-hmm. There's so much power here. It's who emerges and takes that responsibility. I've not seen too many sporting directors' names, I don't think. Like, there's been links with the one at Bournemouth. Is it Richard Hughes? But it's like, well, how's that going to work with the new manager coming in? It's about getting it all in order, in the right order. Mm-hmm. And there's so much uncertainty here. But FSG have known since last summer that Schmachter was likely going to be a year at best.
Yeah.
They've known since November that they need a new manager, a new coaching team. You just got to have faith that they can do the searches the right way and get the right people in, having done their, made the most of their data and done all the research. Like, they're certainly a lot stronger position now than they were when they were first doing these searches over 10 years ago when you were getting in Rodgers or Martinez and Damian Comoli. You feel more confident in looking at people that can make it a more consistent future for the club.
Yeah. I also don't think you can second guess Liverpool that much anymore. We knew for years the profile of player that they were after, the kind of money that they spend. But you had Jörg Schmacker on the bingo card when I was talking about replacing Julian Ward. You know, he was retired. He just finished at Wolfsburg and retired in February. So, you know, he's retired even before that season's over. He's coaxed back out of retirement to sign a one-year contract under the kind of informal agreement of it being a three-month review. And also, the way it kind of shaked out in the summer when they were going for Romeo Lavia and then pivoted to Caicedo for twice the money and then had to pivot again to Endo for, you know, barely a tenth of the price. You know, sometimes, certainly in the last sort of 18 months to 2 years, some of the decisions they've done have been very unlike Liverpool and what we come to expect sort of in that Klopp-Edwards era. So that's why I think it's a little bit difficult to second guess who the sporting director replacement might be, or even how that structure might work with a new manager and who he might be. So many questions up in the air, but at the moment, on the pitch, things are ticking along nicely, aren't they? I think if they weren't, we'd all be kind of saying, well, what's going on with this club? They're in free fall. But the results are ultimately what matter most, and you can't pick holes in many of them of the last 4 months.
What you can say is obviously there's been so much stability over the manager for the best part of a decade, but that will be another sporting director and third, fourth change in quick succession. Yet whoever has been the sporting director, granted they're a figurehead, but the signings have still predominantly been spot on. We can have our questions about what actually went on in the summer in terms of Caicedo and midfielders going to Saudi Arabia and this, but you look at those four midfielders they got in now, and you can't fault any of them. They're all really good signings in their own different ways, whether it was making the most of a buyout clause, really good value. Endo's proved him to be a bargain. Gravenberch, you've got faith in his potential. Before that, sniffing out a Diaz, sniffing out a Gakpo, getting Nunes, who's getting better every week. So the recruitment team who are still in place behind them, they're still pretty much the same. Yeah. There's still going to be some stability there, but you just need the right figureheads in charge.
Absolutely. We'll talk about Norwich now.
Norwich. Before
we do, loads of people watching live, please give us a like, subscribe, press the bell to get notifications. That would really help support us.
How far off are we from you doing a TikTok dance or something for advertising?
I'll do whatever you need. not like you, Theo. I won't just sort of grumble. If you need me to do a TikTok dance, Ian, if you're listening, our producer, I'll do a TikTok dance. That's what the people want. You give the people what they want. But look, more people have just started watching from when I've just said that. But yeah. Yeah, give us a like, give us a subscribe. We're trying to go live quite a few times this week. And again, sorry, weekly basis from now on. But again, it's going to be such a busy period that I think there should be some really interesting conversations to be had on this podcast. So, please do. Back to it. Who wants to show us to do a TikTok dance? Or Theo, why did you say that?
You'll give the people what they want.
I did just say that. I'm a man of my word. Norwich, the Canaries. 5-2, good performance. Let's talk about some of the young players. Very distracted by talk of TikTok dancers. Connor Bradley, I tweeted yesterday saying he's the new Cafu, and I know we've seen that before with John Flanagan, but he really is the new Cafu.
I don't know if there's any doubt now. Four games in a row.
I just love it. He combines like this busy sort of like... He's so busy, he's so tenacious. But once he gets into the final third, he's so clever in the way that he uses the ball in terms of whether it's a lofted cross, whether it's a small little pullback. I love the way he does that, and he gets into really good areas. Is the way he won the ball, he combined that, all of that I'm talking about for the Nunes goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
It really fills me with a lot of excitement over what he can achieve.
Great bit of anticipation, wasn't it, for that Nunes goal? Two assists yesterday for Connor Bradley. I thought yesterday was probably his best game yet, and he's grown in confidence in the last few games, hasn't he? Yeah, it just looks to be a player with a really bright future. You know, he went alone at Bolton and was sensational there by all accounts, but making the step up to Liverpool is still a big task and a huge kind of daunting prospect for any young player. It's just a shame he had that injury earlier in the season, otherwise he'd have played a lot more and we'd probably be raving about him even more than we are. He would have played all of the Europa League, wouldn't he? Now you're looking at him thinking there's no real need to position Joe Gomez in there if Alexander-Arnold is injured or in midfield. I think Bradley has shown enough to deserve more starts, more minutes for certain games like Norwich in the Cup or Southampton or Watford in the Cup. You imagine he's going to be playing now, isn't he, in the FA Cup right the way through till maybe the last
just
stages.
Would you start pushing Trent into midfield to play more Connor Bradley? I mean, obviously there's bigger tests to come. But...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be forcing it upon the side against Chelsea, for example. But I think there are times when you can do it against certain teams, in certain competitions. Maybe a little bit too soon to be declaring them the long-term right-back for Liverpool for the next 10 years. But you just need to keep going in the right direction. And we saw it with Trent and me a few years ago. You know, once these young players get a chance, they show you what they can do. And then over time, they establish themselves as mainstays of the team. So four games in a row, he's certainly made hay while the sun's shone in Alexander-Arnold's absence. And when he plays now, when he's in the team, you wouldn't be a little bit concerned over that being a weak point, would you? Because he's shown that he's got plenty of talent. And James McConnell as well, sure we'll come on to him, but I thought he played really well as well.
Let's come on to him now.
Do you want to go, Theo?
Give Theo a go, James McConnell, you sometimes associate a lot of young players being used with a bit of a transitional season or a season which maybe hasn't been as good, so they're trying people out. But, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head how many youngsters Jurgen Klopp has tried this season, but he's put in a lot. I mean, to a man, they've pretty much been good. The Europa League has obviously helped with that, but
yeah.
James McConnell, really good performance, very busy. I thought, again, used the ball really well. And it speaks a lot to, and again, the Jurgen Klopp succession. It speaks a lot to the way they've set the academy up and the way they've got them playing the same way as the first team. You're just seeing that continuation on you when a player steps up, and I thought James McConnell did that very, very well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we've had conversations with the 21s manager and the 18s manager over the year, and they're always talking about that continuity of we play the same way so these players know what it's like. It's easier for them to step up, and now they're actually making that step up. You can see the benefits of them, that it's not taking a time to get up to speed. They can just go straight in and hit the ground running. McConnell, he's probably not one you'd have placed right at the top of the list to be in that first team squad getting as many games as a Bradley or a Kwanzaa. Mm-hmm. But he deserved his opportunity. He's done well in pre-season. He's obviously impressed in training behind the scenes. He's had a couple of appearances, and it was a very enthusiastic performance from him. It was a brilliant assist.
Yeah.
Across for Curtis Jones. Jones is making a habit of that far post run, but to still put it on his foot, put on his head, wherever, for it to do it is superb.
And it was a really nicely lofted ball.
It was. You've got the perfect weight on it. And he works so hard in midfield. He got a standing ovation when he came off, but some of the tackles he was putting in timed perfectly. If he did lose it or he was chasing shadows, he still got back and made sure that they weren't left short defensively. Maybe got a bit lucky to avoid a yellow card late on for one very enthusiastic tackle, and it's a shame he couldn't do the 90 minutes, probably cramp speaking through coming through there. But it was a really promising display from him, and he becomes an option as a number six. Whether he can be a long-term part in the first team squad, we'll wait and see. It's still very early days from him, but there's so many good youngsters here, and you're just waiting for them to overcome injury and see what they can do. Like, if Bradley hadn't got injured, he'd probably be in the same boat of Kwanzaa. It's rotating a little bit with Trent going more into midfield for some games. Stefan Bacetic, how much would he have played this season if he hadn't been injured? Bobby Clark, like, we've only seen a couple of substitute appearances, but Klopp's said himself he is ready. We've just got to be able to give him the opportunities. He said himself on Bradley, he was glad he could give him the opportunities. And we all know what happened with Kate Gordon being out for a long time. Ben Doak's out now. They've got some really, really talented players here who are ready, who've come through the academy, and they're following in Trent and Curtis Jones's footsteps of making that step up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other young player I want to talk about. I know a couple of difficult moments yesterday, but in general, I thought, again, he was very good. It was Gerald Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm at the point now where you look into the summer, I still think they need a centre-half, but that would be a Matip replacement now.
Yeah.
And I would look at it and go, Van Dijk, Konate, Matip replacement, Kwanzaa, there you four. You've got Joe Gomez who can play across the back four and you can drop into centre-back. But, I mean, Kwanzaa just carries himself like a proper centre-back, doesn't he? A proper top class. I mean, the way he uses the ball,
I think that's
the biggest giveaway to me. He's good in the air and he's good at the defensive aspects of the game, but I love the way he passes the ball. I think that is a skill that it's hard to find for top-level centre-backs.
Yeah, I remember seeing him at Bournemouth in the Cup, and there was a period there where he's getting pressed quite a lot towards the corner, and you know, 9 out of 10 defenders would have just smashed it up the line and got rid of it. And he kind of plays like a weighted left-footed pass up the line to whoever it was on the day, possibly Gomez, and it just got Liverpool out of trouble and now got them on the front foot. It's just a nice little example of what he's like in possession.
There was one like that yesterday as well in the first half in sort of the right back area. I think Liverpool were pressed quite highly up the pitch, and they looked a little bit in danger, but between him, Bradley, and I can't remember who else, but it's just the composure he showed to sort of move away from the man pressing him and sort of keep the ball and pass his way out, I thought was just... It's not, you know, a lot of the young centre-backs come in and they'll put it in the stand and you don't blame them for that, but he just seems to have that extra class.
And the thing as well is he's only 20, so he looks like he's ready now, but he's only going to develop physically.
He's 21 today, it's his birthday.
He is actually 21 today,
happy birthday, Gerald. Yeah. Big day.
So it's, you know, he's nowhere near finished in terms of his physical development. Obviously, technical and tactical have got some way to go as well. So, yeah, Liverpool have got themselves a player there, haven't they? And all of a sudden, you are looking at it thinking, you know, he's going to be a serious option, certainly between now and the end of the season. You don't really blink now when he's in the team, do you?
No. I'd play him against Chelsea. I mean, I don't think they need to, but I would play him against Chelsea.
Yeah, you wouldn't be overly concerned at all.
Not at all.
He hasn't really made any major mistakes. He's just very calm, confident. I think Van Dijk was saying after the Burnley game possibly that he's better than he was at that age, and that you know that might be a little bit hyperbole or a little bit kind of Van Dijk playing down his own ability, but it's quite a thing to say, isn't it? He says it of Konaté as well, but I can possibly believe that a little bit more of Konaté. Yeah. You know, he's a little bit older, isn't he? But yeah, Liverpool, I've got in Gomez as well. He's only 26. Konaté and Kwanzaa, three very young players with massively high ceilings.
Yeah, and another young player who's not quite as young, but I just thought continue the remarkable season is Curtis Jones, which I think when we were speaking about him a few months ago, I think you'd see, you know, comments maybe on the pod or on articles and in our own office. I won't name his name, but some people quite critical of him. But I think the more this season goes on, the more and more he looks like someone he's not a young player trying to force his way into the side anymore. He is a fully fledged first choice midfielder. And yesterday again, he played like, you know, he had some young players around him, and he played like a proper senior player.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, at the moment for me, he's the first name in that midfield. Yeah. Like, he's definitely coming on leaps and bounds, and you wonder how much more developed he would be if it hadn't been for when he gets the untimely injuries or the suspension. But he's playing with such confidence at the moment, and he's really growing as a leader in this squad for someone so young. He's just got a bit of everything, doesn't he? He's got great runs in the box. He times it perfectly. He's got a finish on him.
His pressing is really good.
He's like leads the press along with Elliot when Elliot plays. He gets back. He wins the ball back.
He never hides. And I think that is massive. You know, certainly in a three-man midfield, you need someone who's able to take the ball with back to goal, to take the ball and relieve pressure. And he does that so well. I think that is such an underrated part of that midfield. You know, Wijnaldum used to do that really well.
He's always had the comparisons there, isn't he, in terms of how he can shield the ball as well. It's just funny when you think back to the summer when they were being linked with all those players who were playing at the 21s Euros, Kone and Saram. I did it a piece tonight, almost tongue-in-cheek, saying they've already got the best midfielder at the tournament. And it just grew in stature as he went along and won in that. But yeah, he's come on even more for Liverpool this season. Maybe you'll get that full international recognition soon, but who cares if he does, as long as he keeps doing it for Liverpool. And if they play, Chelsea in the League Cup final, they do play Chelsea in the League Cup final, you would expect him to start that game.
Yeah, and final word on the game, Gorsley, before we talk. I really want to talk names in the frame for manager. Jota and Nunes, I mean... Mm-hmm. Salah goes off to the AFCON and then picks up the injury, and you're just looking at them too. Nunes, you're looking at him saying consistency. Jota, you're looking at him saying, you know, get back fit and play games and score goals. And they've both just done that, haven't they? And Diaz has played very well as well. But I think those two have really, you know, the shot that hit the post yesterday from
Nunes. Oh, yeah, right? It's lucky that, isn't it?
Yeah, and then great finish. And then Jota's finish was just lovely. Just scores every type of goal, doesn't he?
Yeah. Six goals in a week for those two, adding to that ever-growing tally of the front five's overall contribution. Yeah, I mean, all you can ask of them is that they score goals while Salah's not here, and you can't really argue so far, can you? Has three games, six goals.
All four have in his absence, haven't they?
Yeah. Jota's was a wonderful finish, really, off his left foot. I know we've spoken loads about kind of his calibre as a finisher. Purely as a finisher, I think he's Liverpool's best finisher by far. It was interesting to see the debate become a little bit wider last week, wasn't it? After Carragher claimed that he was, you know, was up there with like Robbie Fowler and whatever else, and a few others Liverpool's top finishers. He's just, I thought he was quite quiet yesterday. You know, very Jota-esque, kind of flits in and out of the game. But then
you said it at half time, didn't you?
Yeah, and then he gets half a sniff there and absolutely buries it, and it's just a brilliant goal. And Nunes as well, just building on that performance against Bournemouth the week earlier, took his goal well. So unlucky with that one that killed it.
I like that he's played Nunes consistency through these games, because you just want him to keep getting goals.
Yeah,
you want him to just, in his own head and
just,
elsewhere,
just get the tally up.
Yeah, get that tally up.
But it's funny though, because I had more faith in him with that one that hit the post than the one that he scored from. And the one he hit the post from was back to goal, spins on it 25 yards out, curls it against the post, and the other one was, you know, take a touch and stick it away. But yeah,
well, my mate texted me this, like, if you look at the first one against Bournemouth, that's two shots where you'd expect him normally to just leather it straight at the keeper or put it wide, and he's actually been really composed and just rolled it in the corner. He's learning, he's getting better.
I mean, maybe that says a lot about us being a little bit unfair on him at times, but I thought the second one against Bournemouth was really good, actually. He knew he couldn't do much with it. He just had to get something on it and divert it back across goal. And he's in good form, isn't he? And ideal going into Wednesday night, because
and Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Sunday's huge, isn't it? But Liverpool, I just hope the game on Wednesday isn't a kind of Manchester United style board draw where they're content to sit in and Liverpool get flustered by it.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I want to talk runners and riders for the manager job, but first, before they do that, let's just quickly rattle off a team and a prediction maybe for Wednesday night. Like you say, with Chelsea, they're just such a... I mean, I don't even know what to expect from them. You know, what they've sort of finally sort of picking up a bit of form, but they still managed to lose to Middlesbrough in there. And I just don't know. You don't know what type of Chelsea side's going to turn up. And no, I never think Liverpool versus Chelsea games are easy games. I thought a point away at the start of the season, albeit what happened afterwards with the way Chelsea's form went, you know, it looked maybe a missed opportunity, but I thought it was a good point at that point in time. But I don't know what to expect from them. Pick a team for us, Theo. Obviously, Alisson goal, who's your back four?
Konate and Van Dijk at centre-back. Joe Gomez can keep his place at left back. I think you've got to be a bit gradual with Robertson's return. I know he's had that sub appearance there.
Yeah.
It's the debate on Trent. Do you throw him straight back in when Bradley's playing so well?
Bradley's playing so well, isn't he? But
I think I'll go for the experience of Trent, but I wouldn't be too sad if he didn't.
Yeah, I'd agree with that defence.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. And you mentioned it, you don't know what Chelsea side you're going to get. In the big games this season, they've actually done well, haven't they, to beat Tottenham? Obviously, Tottenham had injuries and men sent off and that, but...
it's a wild game, that, to be fair.
Yeah, they should have beaten Arsenal. They kind of allowed Arsenal to get back into it later on. Had that crazy game of the season draw with Man City, didn't they? So they're generally doing okay in these big games. But that'd be by Mac Four. I think I would pick Trent over Conor Bradley.
Conor Bradley's been brilliant, but I think it's just, don't forget, before Trent got injured, he was playing ever so well and real class. Yeah. And I thought Newcastle game, he was excellent. So, that would be my back four. Midfield, McAllister, things be okay?
I hope so. You were in Klopp's press conference when you done the update on McAllister. I'm not too sure what his state is, but if he is, then he was brilliant against Bournemouth. And that is kind of the yardstick of what he needs to do in that position.
Yeah, Klopp was saying that if it was like the last game of the season or a cup final, he probably plays. But at this point, you don't want to take any risks with him. Yeah. He said he felt something and they didn't want to know anymore. It's like, fine, you're not playing. Yeah. Have a weekend off. Yeah. If he's fit, he starts there. If not, you put Trent and keep Bradley in. And then it's what? Jones and Szoboszlai,
Jones. That's your midfield, isn't it? Definitely. And then up front, you're either you two going to argue with Diaz, Nunes, Jota?
No. There's not too many options, is there? While Salah's not there, it's you know, 4-3, and I don't think Gakpo had his finest hour yesterday.
I feel like he's been a bit unlucky, Gakpo.
He struggled for rhythm this season.
He's still, you know, I still, again, if... God forbid it's an injury, I wouldn't mind him playing, but I think he doesn't get into that three when the others are fit. Quick prediction, and we're not going, we usually end on this, but we're gonna talk managers, but quick prediction, Gorsty.
I mean, I can't remember the last time these two had a draw. We were talking about it the other day, and the one that we settled on was Liverpool beating them in September 2019.
It wasn't a draw,
in normal time.
That was with the fans, wasn't it? Because there were two in the pandemic, with no fans.
I think Liverpool to sneak it 1-0, Jota.
Yeah.
Oh, go 2-0. Let's be confident.
Yeah, I feel 2-0. I think, look, I mean, you're right, they've done well in big games, but there's no reason why Liverpool shouldn't believe they can beat this Chelsea team. I mean, I have in my head that they're mid-table, but they may have improved a little bit. So let's just double check.
Well, with no Europa League,
they are ninth. You know, I think, you know, Liverpool played Newcastle at home, they're 10th, and they beat them comfortably. I think they should be thinking the same about Chelsea.
you know, have like European night vibes.
Yeah, they've been beaten 8 times this season. It's an evening game. I think Liverpool should fancy themselves to beat Chelsea quite comfortably, and I hope that they do that. Right, runners and riders. Obviously, you and I discussed our preferred options on Friday. I am still sticking with Xabi Alonso for the time being. obviously, Leverkusen drew at the weekend, but remain top of the Bundesliga. I'd still argue that, look, obviously, there's a lot more, but Klopp won 2 Bundesligas, obviously got to the Champions League final, won some cups, got Mainz promoted into the Bundesliga and went back down with them. If you look at Alonso, he got Real Sociedad B promoted, went back down with them, and then he possibly could win the Bundesliga. Obviously, he's not as far along as Klopp, but that bodes well. It's not far off what Klopp was doing. So I stick with him. I think he'd got the emotional connection. I think you get someone's going to need an emotional connection to give them time, especially following Klopp. So that's who I'd go for. The Sporting Lisbon manager is in the frame, as is Brighton's manager, Roberto De Zerbi. I mean, that seems to be the caliber of manager that's in the frame. You sticking with De Zerbi?
I wasn't necessarily saying I want Roberto De Zerbi as Liverpool's next manager. It's just obviously he's just playing devil's advocate, really, and just talking through the runners and riders. It's not a field littered with massive options, is it really? Even if you're looking across European football, you know, Xavi's just been sacked as Barcelona manager, hasn't he? And they're not too many clubs with, you know, all singing, all dancing managers, are they? Obviously Manchester City, but that Liverpool never going to be getting their manager. But aside from that,
Arsenal have to take a gamble on a number 2, didn't they?
And there's plenty, exactly, yeah. And there's plenty of similarities between Xabi Alonso coming to Liverpool and Mikel Arteta at Arsenal. Yeah. I think Arteta's doing a really good job. I think sometimes he divides opinion for whatever reason, but he's got them playing. He's got them as a serious club again, hasn't he?
They were broken before he took over. Really unified them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see the similarities there. But there's just not anyone really outstanding managing the other candidates, is there? And I suppose this is where the club will earn the corn, or the people at the club. But, I wasn't necessarily nailing my colours to the Zerbi mast. It was more just for the talking point, really. I probably would say Alonso at the moment. Like we say, I don't think you can properly second guess Liverpool anymore.
A few people throwing Thomas Frank in there.
I like Thomas Frank, but
I don't think, I think he'd need another club. I think Thomas Frank's one of them where if he went to Tottenham and did well, then we might talk Thomas Frank. But I think Liverpool have put themselves again and again. If Liverpool were in 6th place trying to challenge for the Champions League like they were when Rodgers came in, okay. But I think Liverpool have put themselves to a level now where, you know, they should be able to take the Tottenham manager, for example. So I think Thomas Frank needs another job. You can say that about Alonso, but if he wins a trophy, then maybe.
Yeah, are we all sort of a little bit more aware of the other employees of clubs these days? Whereas years ago, it was very much just the manager whatever the results were were down to him. I mean, ultimately, I suppose they are, but, you know, certainly now you know who these technical directors are, who these influential coaches are behind the scenes at other clubs, not just Liverpool. So it's not necessarily the manager being this kind of autonomous, oracle who knows it all, is it? That's a very much a kind of old style picture of them in the Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger mold. It's different these days. So maybe that kind of plays into the fact that there's not this one big, massive, outstanding candidate.
Look at the big names who are available with the best CVs. It's what, Zidane, Mourinho, and you wouldn't want them. You want someone who's maybe a bit younger, and it is a gamble if you go for Alonso, but because he's at that stage, it's another legacy appointment, someone who can really come in and carry on for 7-8 years like Klopp if he has successful times. And it feels like because they're such big boots to fill, you need to be someone who's already got a little bit of a connection there, so you get that bit more patience from the fan base. They can see you're trying to work it through. Because like Liverpool could realistically win 3-4 trophies this season and then finish 4th next year. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just
Realistically win four trophies?
I said three or four.
Three or four.
Oh, do you want me to...
Some season.
Downgrade it to two, shall we?
Someone's asked about Postecoglou, Anthony Green.
I said that's too early, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he said exactly that. He said he's been an amazing fit. But that's what got me the other day. Anthony Green is Australian, so he said he may be biased. I think you are, Anthony. Although I do like Postecoglou.
I like him, he's
a fun guy, but that got me the other day. I think Doyle said that in the office he's older than Klopp.
Did he?
And we were all a bit like, well, really? But yeah, I do think... someone a bit younger. Someone saying, has Van Dijk done his badges? Could he be a Dowd League manager? You just don't see that anymore, do you?
No. James Milner, Bracken style.
Yeah, I think if you know,
playing myself every week,
we could have that conversation if perhaps the whole backroom staff weren't walking out. But I mean, yeah, I mean the sporting manager Ruben Amorim. I think I pronounced that right. A few people thought that about him, but I don't know about Portuguese managers. I kind of think like it's such a hard league to judge. That unless they're doing something like really breaking up I think it was at Braga, wasn't he? Did well with them, am I right in saying?
I'm not sure, actually. But I'll look into that one.
Again, Liverpool will do their homework on how he plays, his style, management. Talk up for me, Theo, because I'm going to cough and splutter. Talk.
Vias Boas was one, wasn't he? Portuguese manager who came with loads of pedigree to Chelsea.
Thanks for saving me there, Gus.
I think it's been 20 years since Mourinho walked in to Chelsea. I don't know. I mean, I haven't really kept up to date with sporting too often. And obviously Liverpool looking at one of their key defenders, aren't they? And Ousmane Diamant.
Maybe that's the only reason the name's Conan there, because you could take a defender with him.
Mm.
But like Fubin with a couple of their players, but you feel like you want someone a bit more proven in the higher leagues.
I think don't forget what one thing that will be going on behind the scenes is real homework into their style of play. I read something on The Athletic at the weekend about Alonso, that his side plays a slightly shorter style of play than Liverpool, playing a few longer balls out to the wing. But I think, look, you're going to have to accept that you're not going to get a carbon copy, so your style of play will evolve, will change.
Alonso is flexible, though.
Good managers are flexible, and Liverpool don't play the exact same way. They take the main principles, but they don't play the exact same way that the Dortmund team play. They play a different setup, a different formation. So managers evolve, don't they?
It's just come to me then, actually, the fact that Liverpool announced that Schumacher is leaving in February as opposed to the end of his one-year contract. Does that mean they want to get someone in early doors to run the rule over the incoming managers?
That's what I said earlier. You would expect so, wouldn't you? You'd expect.
Yeah, because otherwise you could have just left him working away behind the scenes towards the...
Like you could have done the Julian Ward job of, I'll get the first one in the door for you.
I think they want all that streamlined. I don't think you want a sporting director coming in after a manager and then having that awful thing where the sporting director doesn't work with the manager for whatever reason. You want sporting directors coming with their own ideas and not necessarily to choose the manager, but to certainly say, I can find the right players or the right personnel to fit around them.
Maybe Liverpool will outsource what needs to do into Michael Edwards's and Ian Graham's company that they've founded.
That
could be their first flagship job, couldn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Soccer Nost, something like that it's called. I can't remember the exact name, but
FSU just you're definitely the company.
Gonna... Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be all over news now, that Liverpool journalist.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, Theo, we've sort of given us who we like. You've not really given us a who you like, so give us a...
Mine's Alonso. You need that connection there. I like what he's done with Sociedad, with Leverkusen, like the fact that he came from relegation fight, he turned it around so quickly. It is still early days in his managerial career, but he's worked with so many legends, hasn't he? Like he's going to have the knowledge there. He was always an intelligent player when he was younger. He's got that aura about him, and he is versatile. Like I believe he played like four at the back at Sociedad. That's become a five at Leverkusen, but he works to his players' strengths. He's got some really talented players there that he's in Liverpool link with.
Emotional connection as well.
He could make the leap, and you'd give him time. You'd have confidence that he could carry it on. But then you always say that when it's the leading name, when there isn't any other names. Like if there's someone else came out, they're holding interviews with him, then maybe you feel a bit of an affinity for them. But at the moment, Alonso's the one on.
It's the biggest job of Mike Gordon's tenure as FSG president and de facto day-to-day Liverpool owner, isn't it? He's the one who got told, who Klopp told initially. He's the one who kind of liaises with Klopp more than anyone else. And I think it's fair to say Tom Werner and John W. Henry are not as tuned in into the day-to-day running or just generally European football as a whole. But Mike Gordon is, and he, with the help of the fine scientists in the behind the scenes and whoever else on the staff, have got to get this one right.
Well, do you know what? I wasn't going to do any more, but Mickey One More has put in One More, which I think, perfect name, is really good. Where does Alex Inglethorpe fit in the scenario? Will he leave to the link between the academy and Klopp, very friendly with Jürgen? I mean, I think that would be such a big blow if it was to be announced that Alex Inglethorpe was stepping down.
Didn't he sign a new contract last year?
Yes, he did, yeah. I mean, they kind of run kind of parallel to one another, really. That's why Vita Matos was such a key figure. He was the connector, as they love to call him and refer to him as. So I don't think I've seen anything in the way of Alex Inglethorpe potentially moving on. But
he's going to be crucial in the setup, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got, you know, how long is it? Over a decade of experience in the academy ranks. You know, we've overseen the promotion of so many players, not necessarily into Liverpool first team, but to Premier League stardom and whatever else. So, yeah, they need to keep all of him, I think.
You remember the amount of changes, didn't you? Frank McParland was there. Pep's assistant, what's his name? The
Burrell.
Rodolfo Burrell, Pep Segura.
Pep Segura. What was the Piet Hamberg? Do you remember him? Dutch fella. Lock him up, he was there.
They got through a few reserves managers, didn't they, under Rafa as well? Sort of like John McMahon, Gary Ablett.
I think it's been brilliant what Alex Inglethorpe has done. He's brought stability. He's made that academy tick and work, and we're seeing the real benefits of a long-term strategy. So I really hope he doesn't leave. So thanks for that, Mickey. It's going to be a fascinating few months. So I'm going to repeat.
Yes.
Please like, please subscribe. Please tune in for more of our live videos. We'll be going live as often as we possibly can.
How many likes do you need for a TikTok dance?
many likes. I'm not going to put a number on it. We don't need to put a number on it. But yeah, like, subscribe, press the bell. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, wherever you're watching. Sorry?
Threads,
if you want to, if you're still doing that. That's still your thing. Thank you, Anthony Green. He says, thanks, guys. LFC app, I can't recommend it more. There's a really, really good offer on it at the moment. 6 months free. Premium app, no ads. None of those pesky ads ruining your reading experience. So please go away and get it. And you can listen to these pods on it. And they sort of, you can listen in the background and all that. It's a really good podcast player as well. So thanks very much. We'll see you again this week and hopefully talk after the Chelsea game when Liverpool
transfer deadline day,
transfer deadline day. It's all going on. There's lots.
I need the week off.
Yeah,
I only just realised last week that the Chelsea game isn't deadline day. I thought we were having to do it all in one go.
No. Right. Thank you very much for listening. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.